If the Conservatives in Scotland want to rebuild their vote, it is exactly the same thing. If the UUP want to take the position they should have, representing justice, representing business, representing aspiration and opportunity, you have to start doing that by proving that you can work on the ground. The similarities between what Ian is saying in Scotland and the UUP in Northern Ireland are almost identical. Now, just to go back to Richard's initial points, because coming from the position I'm speaking from this evening, Richard decided to take half of what I wanted to say about the history of the Ulster Unionist Party and use it himself, so that's thanks for that. But we are traditionally and historically a right-leaning party. We have taken the whip historically in Westminster with the Conservatives. We recreated that partnership in the UKMP project. And again, as I say, we ran two elections as UKMP. One of them, we got our man elected. The second one, on the back of the future Prime Minister sitting on primetime TV and saying that he was going to target Northern Ireland for one of the biggest sets of cuts it was ever going to see, still received 15% of the vote, with a campaign that had the DUP, Sinn Féin and the Alliance Party pointing at Cameron and saying, if you vote for them, you're voting for him and he's going to make you lose your job. We still got 15% of the vote. How's that a failure? Yes, we didn't get anybody elected. And that's what it comes down to, bums on seats. But when we're turning over 15% of the vote as a first time out with a horrible name like UKMP, with a completely messed up campaign strategy, with no coordination, with parachuting Sir Reg into South Antrim at the last minute, with candidates not being announced until weeks before the election, with nobody really knowing what UKMP was about, with no clear media message saying this is what we're doing, and then with a future Prime Minister saying, I'm going to cut you like a watermelon, we still got 15% of the vote. The fact that anybody came out to vote for this project at all on the back of those things is amazing. I believe politics in Northern Ireland has got to move forward. That creates a need for a left-right debate. To do that, there has got to be a grouping that's standing up and saying, we are standing up for conservative principles. I believe the Ulster Unionist Party, and having been involved for the last 3 years, there are more natural conservatives in membership in the Ulster Unionist Party than make up the Northern Ireland Conservatives. So we have a larger Northern Ireland Conservative body than the Northern Ireland Conservatives themselves. We need to take that position, say this is who we are, this is what we are, and work from that basis forward. I believe very much that there are people out there who want to vote for real politics, who want to vote for delivery, who aren't seeing it from any other party. We can put a plan in place to move ourselves forward, to prove people that we're not orange and green, that we're left and right, that when people say north-south, we say east-west, that we're looking at building a society in Northern Ireland that is pro-union, but tolerant. And Britishness and being a unionist is about tolerating other people. It's about tolerating races. It's about tolerating religions. It's about tolerating cultures. If we are truly unionists, that's what we're here for. That's what our job is. I believe there's a place for a centre-right party in Northern Ireland. I believe the Ulster Unionist Party is that party.
10 minutes on the button. Bring it back.
Okay, so finally Ian Parthy, who gives a slightly different perspective, because while Bill and I stood as unionists under UKMP, Ian stood as a conservative under UKMP. Don't know if that's the theme, but yeah. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much. I'll stand if I may, so I don't get economy class syndrome. What I intend to do, I always like to speak without notes because it keeps your attention, because you're always wondering whether I'm going to lose the trail of thought completely, and that at least would keep you entertained. What I intend to do is glance at the question, which is Murdo Fraser right? Touch on Lib Dems. I've reason to have experience with them too. Touch on Northern Ireland and the specifics of Northern Ireland, and then come back to throw in a completely different model, just for comparison's sake. First of all, though, I would like to thank Richard for the invite and Mike for chairing this evening, and I think it's very important One of the things political parties are very often spectacularly bad at is communication. It's my profession, so I feel very strongly about it. They're very good at trying to tell us all what they think, not so good at trying to gather in thoughts on what other people might think. It's got to be a two-way process. Something came out of the recent Breakthrough NI event that we talked about. And I think by running events like this, you're beginning that process. And I think that can only benefit you as a party and you as an organisation. So what about my past experience? As you'll know, I've only managed to lose two elections, but I've done so in two different hats. I even managed to win one, of course, but that was with 300 votes, so that doesn't really count. It was with about 1,000 second preference votes from my running mate, actually.
All count.
So they all count, yes. I have some experience of this, and what's always been my driving motivation has actually been improving the quality of our politics and taking more responsibility for all the decisions. And in Northern Ireland in particular, but actually in all devolved setups, and I used to be a lobbyist, I lobbied in Edinburgh as well, I found a degree of irresponsibility because the money was sort of handed over and then you got to hand it out. And actually gave very little room for a centre-right party, and I think it's part of the problem that centre-right parties have had, is that if you're not able to engage in a tax debate, because that's determined somewhere else, then you're at an immediate disadvantage when it comes to handing out lots of money. And the game has changed. And I've always wanted the people of Northern Ireland to have the maximum say over every aspect of policy, including some of the tough ones, some of the ones which require real responsibility. Part of the reason that attracted me to a movement of ongoing devolution, a more federal structure, and we'll come to that, but it's also part of the reason that it attracted me to you come from the idea of people in Northern Ireland being at the centre of decision-making in London as well. So that's where I come at it. First of all, very quickly, my answer to the question, is Murdo Fraser right? Now that I've stepped away from politics, I'm allowed to answer questions directly. The answer is no, but he's got a point. And I think it's no because he's got it topsy-turvy. I don't think you can set out how the Conservative Party should be structured before you set out how the United Kingdom should be structured, and I think that is the big question of our times. The Liberal Democrats, and this is why I come to the Liberal Democrats, some of you may know, actually have what they call a federal executive. What most parties would call their national or UK executive is called federal. They name it federal. They've always named it federal. That means the Scottish Party, the Welsh Party are distinct. It makes easier for them to handle devolution from that point of view. They do have a Northern Ireland party. There is a Northern Ireland Lib Dem party. And they have an arrangement there, which in my view was probably apt before 1998, where that structure exists, but they ask their members to endorse Alliance Party candidates. And I think that what the Lib Dems did there successfully was they set out their vision of the United Kingdom, a federal structure with the principle of consent in Northern Ireland, and they've set out their party structure similarly. So they have a federal structure in Britain. They do have a structure in Northern Ireland. If the moment comes that Northern Ireland opts into the overall political setup, then they could start moving and standing candidates, but they actually instead endorse the principle of consent party. Now, I think post-1998, that's a slightly different argument. Pre-1998, from their point of view, that was a very sensible way to be structured. The difficulty, therefore, I have with Murdo Fraser's proposals is that he's endorsing a structure for the Conservative Party which isn't actually their constitutional policy. And I think that's where it runs into problems. And I think it runs into the fundamental question, which is of interest to you in particular. What is the Unionist vision for the United Kingdom? Because we know pretty well what the Scottish Nationalist vision is. And we know pretty well what the Irish Nationalist vision is. If you challenge them on certain aspects, not least economics, it goes a bit awry, but we know where they're coming from. And we know what Plaid Cymru's is. They finally got around to defining it at their most recent conference. So what is the Unionist vision? And I'm really not sure what it is. And one of the things I've learned in politics is if you go to the electorate and you're not clear about what you stand for, the electorate doesn't vote for you. And I'll tell you one thing about the Alliance Party's relationship with the Lib Dems. There's no formal relationship. But because Lib Dems don't run against them, they allow their members to be members of the Lib Dems. Both their ministers and the executive are actually members of the Lib Dems, which is interesting, because their MP most certainly isn't. That's the way they operate. And they do have an arrangement where they bring over Lib Dems campaigners. And one was a gentleman called Richard Kemp, who was previously the deputy leader of Liverpool City Council. And he told the telling story, I think, which is relevant to all of us. He went to a door, canvassing, and he used to come home with 70% of the vote, so he hardly needed to canvass. Knocked the door, and the gentleman stood and looked at him, arms folded. And he said, "I've read everything you've ever written, and I've listened to everything you've ever said, and I've never agreed with a single word of it." So Kemp said, "Well, that's fair enough. You're a Democrat, you're entitled to your opinion. Can I ask who you vote for? Do you vote Tory or Labour?" Says, "Oh," he says, "I always vote for you." Says, "I'd just like to know what I'm disagreeing with." It's the telling story. He knew what Richard Kemp stood for, even if he didn't agree for it, because he knew. We don't know what unions stand for too often, in the most general UK terms. So that's why I believe Murdo Fraser is going too far too quickly. He may have a point, but I think the Conservative Party overall has to determine what its vision for the union is. The first thing I think it should do, speaking from a Conservative point of view, and I'm speaking independently, but objectively is from a Conservative point of view, is be quite clear to Alex Salmond. Devo Max isn't an option because it's not just about Scotland. If you're in a union, you're in a union with three other countries. You can have devolution as the whole of the United Kingdom agrees it, or you can have independence. But you don't get to have Scottish devolution alone. That's not really an option, because increasingly that will simply increase the movement for an English Parliament, ultimately, who knows, for English sovereignty. So it's not a unionist argument. I think he needs to be very clear about that, that if you're in a union, you have to consider the rest of that union too. Perhaps the Scottish Nationalists would use that as an argument more in their favour, but it would at least start the ball rolling in terms of what a unionist vision is. In conclusion, I would throw out into the argument a completely different model. I hear a lot about the CDU-CSU model. I don't think it's remotely relevant. I've lived in Germany, studied in Germany, lived in Germany as a child, visit every summer. I don't think it's remotely relevant. The CDU-CSU model works, first of all, because there's an implicit threat by the CDU that they could challenge in Bavaria against the CSU and challenge effectively. With the best will in the world, there's no such implicit threat from the Conservative Party in Northern Ireland. They got 1,300 votes last May. They've got 400 members, 1,300 votes. The Alliance Party has 800 members and got 50,000. So there isn't really that implicit threat. And Bill's right, I think, when he says they're actually more Conservatives than the Ulster Unionist Party. Probably more in the DUP as well, actually. It's by no means zero in the Alliance Party either. So there's that to consider. It doesn't work if you don't have that implicit electoral threat, because you can't keep the other party in line in any way at all. I think a much more relevant model, perhaps, but I just throw it in for discussion, is the Canadian model. So in Canada, you can be a member of your provincial party and a member of your federal party, and you can choose two separate parties. So you've had, for example, leaders of the federal Conservative Party becoming Liberal premiers or first ministers. You even have parties switching sides. So the British Columbia Liberals are actually allied to the federal Conservatives now, having switched sides. So you have other parties which are distinct and remain separate from any federal structure, but stand up for their province on a regional basis. And you can be members of both of those. I suppose it goes back to my query that as an Alliance Party member in late 2009, I had to leave the Alliance Party to join the Conservatives to get rid of Gordon Brown. And yet, two ministers didn't have to leave the Alliance Party to be in the same Lib Dems that joined the coalition against him. In some ways, is that not rather ridiculous? What's actually wrong with having the alignment within Northern Ireland structures and within the UK structures? Might that be a model that's worth pursuing too? It's worked in Canada. I think it's more relevant to the UK. So I throw it out there as another option for discussion. But I thank you in particular for the questions.
Thank you very much. Okay, you've heard four fairly different views. We've had vision, we've had values, we've had policies, we've had organisational chaos. Something has to chime. Who'd like to start?
Frank Thatcher.
Ah, oh, yes, Frank.
Okay, I sort of agree with what Aidan was saying, actually, in part because I recognise that in Scotland, from what I can see, just as an outside observer, there is a problem with credibility. There's a perception, I think, of the Thatcherite that we're under, kind of family, that's what the Tory Party stands for. But I would want to just ask Aidan, what changes could be made in terms of, is there a possibility within that structure, within forming the national structure of the party, to allow the Scottish Party to be dropped, particular for Armand, for particular elections, particular campaigning, what mechanisms can you use to change that perception without going for the nuclear option, which is what my refrigerator appears to advocate? Moving on up to the panel as a whole, what's the first thing you're aiming
at? Yep. Thank you, and can I just clarify, there's two Ians on the panel, right, so yeah. When you jump up and say I agree with Ian, I'm going, what one?
I'll take it.
But it is. Thanks. Murdo Fraser is very clearly and explicitly advocating the nuclear option. He says we've hit the bottom. There's nowhere else, you know. There's nowhere for us to go now apart from this nuclear option. Whereas actually, I look around, I went to National Conference down in Manchester, the National Conference in Manchester the other week. You know, the first thing you saw when you walked into the National Conference in Manchester, you got to go through all the stalls and everything to get to the conference arena auditorium. The first thing you see when you walk in is the idea the Conservatives have. So it's a big social action stall, okay? So it is. So the first thing you hit is a social action. Now, the social action, not sure how familiar. Did you do that over here? Was this part of what you were doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So it is. The first thing you see, it's a social action, and everyone at conference is getting hit with this. Come on, and you can do this now. So they're bringing you in and saying, right, come on now. What we were doing was different stuff, but one of them was, come on in, give us 15 minutes. You're recording an audio book for children. Okay, so it is. So it's for blind children. You're recording audio books and it's getting the delegates. Come on in, we're doing this at conference right here, right now. Give us 15 minutes and come back tomorrow and give us another 15 minutes. And there's wee differences. Part of what Bill was saying about absolutely re-engaging. In Scotland, we do social action and folks would come down and get a quick photo cleaning up a park and clear off. And folks say, wow, Annabel Goldie's down and got her photo taken. And then she's... then just clear off. We need to be relevant in there all the time. Now, down south, and a lot of the places, they've done this much more wholeheartedly, much more, you know, bought into it much more. It's not a soundbite, you know, but it's actually real and consistent and done over a long period of time. Then you came through the conference hall after going, well, they really do this differently down here. Then you go through the conference hall and you see the Boris stand and the way they're campaigning. Again, they're saying, right, come on in, everybody. Sign in. When are you coming into the Boris phone bank? When are you getting... doing all the social media stuff for them, when are you doing, you know, it was just a bright, fun, interesting campaign from, again, somebody who's taken a different line. You know, they asked Boris down at conference that came out, they said to Boris, what about the referendum on the EU, do you think we should have one? Boris said, yeah, I think we definitely should have one. Now that's a marked step away from national policy that Cameron and Co are setting in Westminster. One of the things Murdo's been saying in his campaign is that he wants a different party so that he can campaign for Scottish Conservative values like let's withdraw from the Common Fisheries Policy, let's withdraw from the Common Agricultural Policy, which was Scottish party policy up till about 8 years ago, and then Westminster. Now Murdo says he was down with Annabel, Ted Brocklebank and Annabel Goldie, Murdo Fraser, Ted Brocklebank, met with William Hague, and he said that policy's got to go. We can't be withdrawn from the Common Agricultural Policy or the Common Fisheries Policy, so drop that. Now, they dropped that, whereas actually Boris is quite happy to take that different line and put out what he thinks is the best way forward. Our guys should have been confident and able to do that and just articulate that and say very clearly, no, of course, everyone knows Scottish fisheries are getting a terrible deal in the Common Fisheries Policy. They really are, and the fishing communities all around are struggling there. We should be able to articulate that and stuff London, but we can do that within the, you know, within the structure of the Conservatives. So there's lots of different things. One is really getting involved on the ground, taking hold of things like the social action. The second is to be campaigning in new and innovative ways, but that are relevant to the areas that they're standing in. Boris's campaign wouldn't work in every city in the United Kingdom. It wouldn't. But it's working very much for London. It's a very apt campaign for London. We need to look at that and say, actually, let's have an Edinburgh campaign. Let's have a campaign right for the Shank Hill there. Let's have a campaign that's right for Leith. Hey, we've not been doing that. To press a nuclear option before we've tried basics like that just seems to me to be an absolute nonsense. So yeah, there's so many basics that we're not doing right.
I think very briefly, what else is there other than the Murdo plan for Scottish Conservatism? I would defer to Ian on that, but the only thing is to look at Wales, perhaps. You know, 1997, the Conservatives were wiped out, equal to Scotland, no MPs, real low ebb. I think it slipped to the maybe fourth party, and in the 10 years intervening, they're now up to, I believe, second party in Wales with 9 MPs. So there's been a real transformation in Wales. I don't know what the secret of that has been, but if anyone does, that's potentially a route back for the Scottish Conservatives.
Wales looked at a bunch of different things. Now, we've just been through in Scotland a look at how we campaign, all our structures, all of that, which has provoked this leadership election, which has provoked such debate. Wales done this 10 years ago. One of the things they looked at 10 years ago was, should we change our names? They came up with a right mouthful of a name meaning forward, the Welsh word for forward. I'm not going to try and pronounce it because who can? But yeah, they had a look at all sorts of stuff like changing their names, and they decided no, they just had to become more relevant to the people of Wales, because they weren't talking to the people in the valleys, they were talking to the people in London. People in London weren't voting for the Welsh Conservatives, the people in the valleys were. So they changed their focus entirely to Wales, and suddenly, well, not suddenly, because it took 10 years to get 8 MPs out of 40, but that's pretty good. I would take MPs out of 40 in Scotland. That would do for us at the moment. But yeah, they just became relevant to Wales. They looked at gimmicks like changing their name, and they wrote it off. They said, people will see right through it. If we change our party name to a Welsh word meaning forwards, they're going to see right through it. We're still the Tories, we've just got a Welsh name.
Do you think there was any sort of, they seem to have put a lot of focus on sectoral interests like farming and business.
Absolutely.
It's actually relevant to their local communities. And that generated votes.
It is very much on what people are talking about here, what's important to people here. So it was things like farming and business. They said, how are we going to focus on business in Wales as opposed to, you know, business for UK PLC? Because that should come from Westminster, as they're saying, all right, how are we going to help UK PLC? But they were fighting hard for what's going to help Welsh businesses, and what, because they need to see that we're fighting for them. What's going to help the Welsh farmers, because they need to see we're batting for them. And that's what's got them.
From a Northern Ireland perspective, and I want to answer this question, from a Northern Ireland perspective, we in the UUP are in the perfect position, because we can be partners with the Conservatives at Westminster. And I believe, again, we will take seats in Westminster that we deserve to have. But we can do that as Conservatives, and comfortably as Conservatives, but still work on the ground in the Northern Irish Assembly, in Northern Irish councils, on Northern Irish and community-led issues. We have the position that we're not already tarred as Conservatives, okay? We can be Conservative aligned, we can be centre-right in our politics, but we already have a grassroots following of 100,000+ people that can only go up if we get our act together. The engagement shown by Wales, the engagement I believe Scotland should be following, is exactly the same engagement that we have to identify on. The difference is, we don't have to argue about our brand, we have to argue about our delivery.
I made the point that I stared into an abyss again wearing a different hat in 2003. Don't forget, in that election, the Alliance Party received 26,000 votes, first preference votes, 23,000 in Greater Belfast. And the Ulster Unionist Party in that election received 93,000 in Greater Belfast. At the last election, the Alliance Party received 50,000, double. Received 40,000 in Greater Belfast to the Ulster Unionist Party's 38,000. Now, how did the Alliance Party do that? It didn't change its name. And actually, I come to the conclusion you're probably both right for the same reasons as Bill indicated. That it's not the name that changed. There are certain things that did change. First of all, was stronger campaigning on the ground, better access to data, better surveying of households, that very basic political campaigning, which I know they're very good at. I did work experience once with the Watford Conservatives and saw how so far in advance of anything I've ever seen in Northern Ireland by any party. But that kind of level, they moved in that direction. Another thing they did, actually, was they recruited a high-profile candidate. Only one, really, but nevertheless, they recruited Anna Lowe in this constituency in South Belfast. And one of the things I think that Boris was able to do in London, and I would use another example, would be Rhodri Morgan in Wales. They were able to be, as big individuals in their own right, stand up against their own party at UK level. So, and you see the Welsh Labour Party has done much better than the Scottish Labour Party in the devolved system, because they had their own people. Indeed, there was a survey the other day where people were asked who the First Minister of Wales was, and most people said Rhodri Morgan still. So they had these individuals, and the Alliance Party picked up with Anna Lowe, who got votes for the Alliance Party well beyond South Belfast, because people just liked the idea of it. So there's an element of that that has to happen. where you have to try to pick up high-profile candidates, of course, who are loyal to your vision and so on and so forth. We are arguably sitting with one chairing this very event. But that's the type of thing you have to do going forward. You have to excite people in that way, whether you like it or not. We sort of live in a celebrity culture. To some extent, you have to do that. And people will vote for people they want to be like, that they really sense they should vote for as a matter of a statement of intent. And so you do need candidates who can do that. But I really think it's a lot more basic than changing your name. We went through all those debates in 2003. I remember them well. Changing the name, what on earth does an alliance party mean anyway? It's nonsense and all that. But actually, it wouldn't have made any difference. So I do think that the basics are more important. But I also would not lose sight of what you're trying to do. What, in my opinion, again, as an independent observer, distinguishes many Ulster unionists, perhaps all, from the DUP, which is their vision of Northern Ireland as part of British society. Now, I'm not so worried about that, but my interest is having a role at every level of politics. And arguably, you are still in the position uniquely among all the parties that you can deliver that. So don't lose that vision. But that doesn't mean you have to rename yourselves or anything like that. It actually means you probably have to work harder.
Mm. Just to raise a point there, while Anna was a massive asset to the Assembly, Naomi's work ethic in East Belfast has also proven just exactly what we're talking about here. Somebody who is coming in from East Belfast, which is unionist homeland, heartland, is able to work her way into the hearts of the electorate and take a Westminster seat. Yes, it may have been a vote against Robinson, but that it was her that got selected and not the Ulster Unionist candidate is saying something about the work ethic.
Well, he did get three salaries, didn't he?
Double jobbing is a whole different issue.
I wonder whether the personality thing, Ian, depends on the party and the strength, the perceived strength of the party, whether the DUP and Sinn Féin are such a strong brand that it doesn't really matter who you've got going for it.
I think they've got to that stage now, But I do think it's certainly helped the Alliance Party. It's certainly, in my view, helped Boris.
Yeah.
And I think Boris... I don't think any other Conservative candidate would have a mission of being Mayor of London, certainly not in the forthcoming election, but he has a chance because he's Boris. I'm not saying that you need to load up with these, and you actually have to be wary, because I've seen many more examples of that failing.
Yep.
Esther Ransom, I remember her. Down south, Colm O'Gorman came into the PDs and they got wiped out anyway. Mm. Usually it doesn't work, but if it's played right, it can work.
And you made that point, Ian, I think, no matter how good your candidate is, if your brand is perceived to be broken, you're done.
Yes. Yeah. No, that is very... The way back to it, though, is a wee bit of hard work. We have elections 7 years and eight, and in Scotland we have elections 7 years and eight. I'm not sure how decoupled your elections are here, but it is. It's elections 7 years and eight, and it's about getting down and working hard. But some of it again is taking the long strategy. One of the other candidates, Jackson Carlow, one of the examples he's using on the campaign trail is in the Scottish Parliament the other week, he had two of the young SNP special advisers going up the stairs in front of them. They were saying, "Yeah, you got the general election agents training next weekend." And the other guy's going, yeah, it's a drag, but yeah, I'm going along, that's fine." Jackson's going, "Man, we're not even thinking about our council elections, which are coming up in May. We've not got them. We've not got our candidates selected for some of our great seats there because we're too busy navel-gazing going, are we going to have a new name?" The SNP are sitting there planning for getting their agents trained up for the general election, which is coming up in 4 years. It's no wonder they're wiping the floor with us, because they've got the basic structures right, they've got the organisation right. It's a long process. It's planning now for an election in 4 years' time. What are we doing for that election in 4 years' time? Because that's going to be vitally important, because actually we want to be governing on our own as opposed to governing with our friends in the Liberal Democrats, and we certainly don't want to be losing to Labour. So let's be getting that now, because our opponents, the ones who are doing very well, the ones who are breaking the system that was designed to ensure no party could get a majority in Holyrood, well, they worked so blooming hard and so effectively and so well, they got a majority despite this electoral system that was set up to thwart anyone doing that. But yeah, it's a long process, it's a long game. Other parties are playing the long game and we're not.
And I think neither are the Ulster Unionists. There was a very interesting blog on Slugger, it might even been Alan, when I was announced as a candidate for Westminster, and it said, "Don't know how good Mike Nesbitt will be as a candidate, doesn't matter. Don't know who the DUP candidate will be up against him, doesn't matter. The DUP will win the seat because the DUP machine